Right, that's right. We're non-productive, and we are live on the air from now until we give up. We don't know how much time we're scheduled for this. I think it's like half hour, hour. We'll see. We're talking about The Mandalorian today and also everything else that Disney Plus is desperately trying to do to keep us indoors. There are so many shows. So many shows are coming.
Pandemic so heroes painful. Right here.
It's gonna. It's, you know, it's definitely worth it. So yes, welcome to Nonproductive. You're probably watching us right now on youtube.com/nonproductive or facebook.com/nonpro, or you're listening to this via a podcast in the not too distant future if we remember to post it in time. I'm your host Frank, joined by hosts James, Darren, and Al. I did not just look at their names and read them off. I swear to you, I know who my friends are. Hi guys, how are you doing?
Hi, Fred.
Wow. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. So throughout the show, if you'd like to comment along and you don't exist in the not too distant future in podcast land, you can just leave a comment on Facebook or YouTube. And then if it's good enough, we'll elevate it during the show. Like, I'm ready with many Y's or Natty's eyeballs. Ah, yeah, we've got technology on our hands. Those will be our only two comments. Anyways, yeah, let's talk about the best thing to happen to Star Wars fandom since the last thing you really liked about Star Wars. We're not going to get political. I don't care what it was. The Mandalorian just wrapped season two, I think a little over a week ago. I don't, time is irrelevant. Yeah, yeah. So we're going to go full spoilers for everything in Star Wars that has ever happened up until this point, up to and including season two of The Mandalorian. This is your chance to continue hiding and not watch the rest of this episode. We're going to talk a little bit about it. We're not going to do a play-by-play episode-by-episode recap. We're not those kinds of nerds. That's not true. We are those kinds of nerds. We did that on our fan club, which you could find on facebook.com/group/nonpro. You could find episode by episode recaps, full of spoilers and fun things. The good thing is also we are not the kind of nerds who will make you feel bad about having feelings. These are just, we're having a good time with Star Wars the way we were meant to. And basically I love this show. This show has brought back such a delight in Star Wars that I haven't felt since I was saying since I was a kid is a bit much. There have been some great movies recently, and just as great moments, you know, even including role-playing games with some of the people in this chat. But yeah, it's just, it really hits the spot on so many different levels that I'm not used to big genre television, franchise television, or movies, or anything to do. It was shocking. It's a moment where you're like, yes, the person who made this knows why I like it and likes it for the same reasons and made something that was really good. What about the rest of you? You have any comments? I could throw it to James since he's there.
Thanks for that prestigious toss-up, Frank.
No problem. No, James, you exist.
Look, I love long form storytelling. You know, since college, I've been, you know, saying long form storytelling with the revolution of the internet is going to be the way to go. You're going to see television take on this new thing, you know, and it's only right and wonderful to see live action Star Wars really thrive in long form storytelling, you know, because we've had, you know, Clone Wars and Rebels and animated Star Wars for a long time now. But you know, to get live action, long form Star Wars storytelling has just been just wonderful. Just wonderful.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. I never really thought, I mean, not to be dismissive of the animated series, but I don't think it's like, it's a blind spot. It always feels like it's extra stuff. Yeah. How about you, Al? Why, what do you feel about The Mandalorian and where Star Wars is right now?
I like it for a lot of reasons. I think it's the closest we've gotten to space Western in a long time. Like all of the trappings of it, so much so like even that the Westerns are sort of derivative of Japanese Kurosawa films. which I think is just part of their charm and part of what makes them interesting and what I like about it.
We're going to cover that. We actually have a little bit of a show and tell for that part. The reason why I zoomed into you, Al, was because you have an amazing Christmas sweater on. I would like the world to see. I love it.
Well, I like to get very festive, so yeah.
I absolutely love that. We did not give Darren a lot of chance to get his Christmas sweater ready.
I didn't know we were doing a thing.
I just Darren, you're just a regular Scrooge. I just have to assume.
No, this I didn't. Is just, he's too cool.
I didn't get the memo. I didn't know there was a sweater thing.
I think I have three like goofy Christmas sweater things. I was about to say something really stupid. I only wear it this time of year. All right. And on that note, Darren, what do you feel about The Mandalorian and where Star Wars is today?
Well, after that, I mean, yeah. Nowhere to go but
and our next presenter.
Yeah, I mean, The Mandalorian, I really dug it. I really liked it. I mean, come on, Baby Yoda. How can you not love that adorable little...
The Baby Yoda show.
Yeah, or, you know, Grogu, if you're fancy. yeah, I really dug it. I mean, one of the things I really liked about it is, it's a thing that a lot of people weren't crazy about, is how it had like a lot of those kind of standalone episodes throughout it where it was, you know, because like the whole thing is like the Mandalorian trying to do this one thing, and like he'll meet up with somebody and they'll say, well, I can help you with this. And yeah. Then the next episode is, well, I can help you, but you got to do this. Like, there's always like another thing he has to do in order to get to the thing, the ultimate thing. And to me, that kind of reminded me of like those, what you call it, those action shows from the 80s, like, you know, like Knight Rider or something, where it's just like one man on a mission and he has all these other side adventures.
Or like Crane. Oh, yeah.
Everything is a step towards the endless, like, and in those shows in the 80s, like, it was never going away. Like, they're Quantum Leap. He was not leaping home at the end of the season. Like, that was not going to happen, and it didn't even happen at the end of the series. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler? Whoa.
Yeah. Jeez, man. Whoa. Oh, God. I feel like I need to point out, because I didn't, I was being a bad host.
Spoil the story of Christmas, why don't you, Frank?
We just got to look. We got to take a look at James. Where did you get that lovely selfie? Hashtag selfie. Where'd you get that? We've never had such low viewership.
It's actually my wife's sweater. I don't own any fun Christmas paraphernalia, so I asked my wife if I could borrow it.
You know what?
Close.
Thank you. Thank you for taking one for the team. Yeah, so a lot of different feelings here, mostly on how, like, we wanted this to work. And I think what was truly surprising is how well The Mandalorian does work for what it is. It's, again, so I watched a lot of both seasons of The Mandalorian. I was fortunate enough to watch it with my parents, a little bit more remote season two.
How'd that go?
Parents are not savvy. They're not, they are not Star Wars savvy. My dad is, he likes genre movies. He's more like fantasy kind of, but he doesn't, I don't know if he quite remembers the through line through a saga. James is talking about like long-term storytelling, and maybe Star Wars has had TV shows, but it's definitely had saga. It's definitely had, you know, trilogies, three trilogies, in fact. Mm-hmm. I don't know if my father really follows the entire story through to the beginning to the end. My mother does not, refuses. Absolutely refuses to know anybody's name. That guy with the dark helmet is what? That's not even a reference to her. She's like, he's got a dark helmet. He's dark helmet. What's dark helmet doing? Doesn't. But she loves Westerns. Loves them. And this, I mean, beyond, like, if you're a fan of Westerns, of course, you're going to, there's some elements to this you're going to enjoy. But the fact that this was so easy to follow, but not childish. I guess what I'm saying is, with The Mandalorian, the show was it's a masterclass in giving people what they want in a way that doesn't, to me, feel like the dirty word fan service. We could talk about whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. Fan service is, I don't even know exactly why it would be a bad thing, but it is really hard to give people what they want when they've been wanting it for 30, 40 years and not everybody wants the same thing. And we're literally talking about millions upon millions of people, and to make something that at least I'm sure there are people out there who don't like The Mandalorian, but many, if not most fans can look at that and say, yeah, no, this is what I wanted. Exactly, mostly what I wanted, and is shockingly hard. And I think we're very dismissive of it. I think if you look at people who talk about filmmaking, they make it seem as if many of them will make it seem as if fan service is something that's like to be dismissed. It's not important. It's lazy. When in reality, it is super difficult. There's so much money in making fans happy, and it so rarely actually happens. But this show pulled it off again and again and again.
Storytelling is such a unique balance, right? We simultaneously want something that feels familiar, right? We want it to be Star Wars. We want it to be genre. We want it to be Western. You know, we want it to be new and exciting, right? You know, do stuff that surprises us, but don't surprise us too much, because we want to see that stuff that's familiar. We want to have the characters that we remember, but we want new characters. It's an incredible balance, an incredible balance. And I think one of the things that's awesome about The Mandalorian is that it's really bringing a lot of people to the table who have a lot of experience doing that, right? Obviously, Dave Filoni with Star Wars, John Favreau as a storyteller, but even their guest directors, right? We're talking about people like Taika Waititi and
Rodriguez.
Thank you. Robert Rodriguez was another name that I was thinking of. You know,
the actors directed the one of the episodes of the season, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Carl Weathers directed an episode.
Carl Weathers directed an episode. But people who have they've got real storytelling chops. You know, these are people who have been involved in really good projects, right? Some of them Star Wars, obviously, with Dave Filoni. You know, but some of them in other things that are relevant and adjacent. You know, they bring Western talent. They bring, you know, high-class acting chops like Carl Weathers. You know what I mean? Like,
every time you say high class acting chops and Carl Weathers, I think Arrested Development, where Carl Weathers was an acting coach, and he was so sad, but it was hilarious. He did a great job with that. But I'm sorry.
But yeah, that's not to say that other things in Star Wars haven't done that. But again, that's kind of the advantage of long form storytelling, like really long form storytelling. Like, great, Taika Waititi is going to be great for this episode. Robert Rodriguez is going to be great for this episode. John Favreau is going to be like, I'm going to handle this one myself. Dave Filoni's like, cool, I'll handle this one. You know, that's an advantage to television. That's what's cool about television, right? There are so many people who get to make a thing. You know, we think a lot of people make movies. 5 times that amount of people make television.
Yeah, basically every episode is a movie. And the fact that there's a narrative thread that connects it all is amazing. So let's do the necessary Jon Favreau appreciation portion of the show. And it's not, of course, it's not all on one person's shoulders, but you can't ignore a filmmaker who has done such a stellar job of translating the joy that accompanies fandom with an actual good story and good product, right? We've got Iron Man and effectively the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You've got The Mandalorian, which, and we're not going to be weirdly political about Star Wars or anything, was a critical and a mass hit. Most fans enjoyed it to some extent. And then you've even things like Elf. You know how hard it is to make a classic,
a tradition, Christmas, yeah, like a classic? Traditional Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's
and that's his first film. That's his first directorial debut. Elf.
It is amazing what he is able to do, and I think it's like he definitely has an eye for story and a mind for story, but he also loves the thing he's working with. There's got to be some level of love to know what will work and what maybe. If a panel of executives decided to do something is not necessarily the right way to go forward. You can't kind of make stories by committee, but you can't make these kinds of stories alone. right? So like, it's, you got to have the right committee, I guess.
And they definitely succeeded. Was it that it actually just went ahead and made something that was very digestible? And it, like Frank was saying, like, it had to be surprising, but not like in the way people didn't want. I think it didn't necessarily play it safe. It just worked on quality. And the fact that it was taking place in this universe and maybe call back to things, like Frank was saying, it didn't shy away from fan service, is what made it decent, is that it picked a character that we had never met before, we had never interacted with before, but we could assume things about him because we knew other characters like him in the Star Wars universe. Like, he wasn't Boba Fett, but he looked enough like Boba Fett for government work. So like, it's like, it got away with it. There was some good shorthand for it. So it was like, it was there. We got it. We knew who he was. And I think that worked wonders because it made us sort of know who he was, know what was going to happen, know the stories we were probably going to hear about. And it just sort of told very simple, short stories. Like, and that was what really was good. There was an overarching plot. There was a big thing that everything had to deal with, sure. But like, what I think sold it isn't necessarily so much that it didn't over-create, for lack of a better term. I think it made something that worked on its quality first and foremost. And I think that's why it was so widely accepted. Not necessarily like, because like there's just a formula or like it hit the magic thing. Oh, I think they just spent a lot of time on what they had to make it good. And to make it as like clean slate digestible as it could be. And that's not a slight against, not a bad thing to make your thing easily to consume. But I think that's what works with it. I think that
making something that isn't too complicated for you to get your foot in the door is nothing. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
If I had to pull up a couple of elements, and this is kind of a free form, so if I'm not letting you talk, yell at me and I will. But I think some of the elements that make this thing work is that they were building on the universe. I've never seen anything build so much. Like there was 20 episodes, I think, or so. Well, maybe less than 20 episodes 16. For the entire series. 16, 8. And so much world building happens in them without there ever being like almost no exposition dumps, right? Nothing where it's like, this is how the world works. Here's a Senate meeting where we're just going to talk about things for a little bit and describe how the things work. Everything is just, you pull in through osmosis, just looking at the elements that they've used for the story, and they kept it enough in the periphery so that none of this feels like you're just rehashing the same stories over and over again or recontextualizing it, even when they touch on things. I mean, the first big reveal in episode one of the series is about Yoda, effectively, kind of. It's the child, right? And it says a lot, but it doesn't say anything at all. At all. I mean, all we know is that there could be more than one Yoda-ish thing. And yes, everyone will want to volunteer Yaddle at this point. But beyond that, you know, that's really all it says.
Well, but it says
a lot more.
It is the baby Yoda is the perfect microcosm of that idea. It's familiar, but surprising, new and old, right? It literally is a perfect microcosm. Right, it's a character we know a ton about because we know Yoda, but a character we know nothing about because the new person, we don't know anything about their race. Like, it's perfect, right? And they do that many times throughout the show, right?
Even and many it, times to that one character, right? When we find when we first hear the word M count, half the audience is freaking out because they're like, are they finally talking about Metachlorians again? And the other half of the audience is like, I don't really know or care. I know that the big bads are looking for him, and this is more science talk, and that's fine.
People dislike
midichlorians.
Moving it to MacGuffin status, and that's fine. Yeah. And we don't spend too much time on it. It's like, we're going to reference this. If you know what it is, you know what it is. But for not, we're moving along.
Yeah, if you don't like it, if you never liked midichlorians for whatever reason, you're one of those people in the early internet who wrote an essay about it, you're probably not going to care too much about this because it's blink and you miss it. And we don't even know necessarily what it means. And it's not essential to anything. It just moves on. It is the MacGuffin to get why the Empire or the remains of the Empire is looking for this one person. It isn't actually until this, maybe when Ahsoka shows up, that we start pulling in more threads and coming up with bigger deals.
So I have a big question here, right? So as someone who's a fan of Dave Filoni, who's a fan of Rebels, who recently got into Clone Wars, Matt and I, you know, I have a question more for, I guess, Frank, you don't really follow the animated shows. And Darren, you said you're more casual. You know, I'm curious, you know, because I think Filoni does a really good job here in bringing these characters in. But all of these people are like pretty big established characters in the animated universe. I'm curious how you guys feel having them here in like larger Star Wars, right? In this bigger kind of crossover and just being like, hey, here's these established characters. How do you feel about them? I don't know. I'm just curious. I haven't gotten to talk to anybody
like that. Darren, you want
to
go first?
Yeah. I mean, I was sort of familiar with Ahsoka, right?
Ahsoka, yeah.
Rosario Dawson's character. I was familiar with her just because I'd seen that character in like, you know, commercials and here and there. So I knew it was a big deal. Like, I knew I'd seen her before. So when she finally appears in that episode, I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. Like, I knew it was a big deal. But, I mean, just from commercials and, you know, things I'd seen before and, you know, just from what I saw on the internet, like, people saying it was a big deal. So when, you know, she finally showed up, I was like, oh, this is a big deal. And you could just sort of tell she's a big deal, like, you know, when I when she says that she's a Jedi and there aren't too many Jedis around.
She says she's a big deal. No.
She says it. And it's Rosario Dawson. They were going to get her for nothing. I'm with Darren. Like, it brought me back to when I was a kid. So when I was young, the only Star Wars basically were the first three movies, and then whatever, like the Silver Age of Star Wars, like Marvel Comics and stuff like that, like very on the edge stuff that weren't canon, no prequels, none of that. So a lot of times you would learn things, and actually even I think when the first movie or the second movie was out of theaters by the time I was old enough to really give a damn about any of this stuff. I was really just aware of Return of the Jedi and all that and VHS stuff that wasn't very common. I don't even know if these were released on VHS right away, maybe Laserdisc. So it was really hard to figure out any of these things. So this brought me back to that moment where I was like, I am aware of this character through background geek radiation. I know James and Matt are kids in the playground who keep talking about her. I think she's a big deal. I don't really know anything about it. I know that she hangs around with Anakin, and that's pre Darth Vader Anakin. I got all of it watching the episode, and I was so happy that I got to document this for people on the fan club. It read perfectly. Perfectly. I got it. Like, this is a Force user. And there's never really been there are no Jedi. And for some reason, she doesn't think of herself as a Jedi. I'm sure it happens in the series. If I watch 10 seasons of a cartoon, I'll figure it out. I don't remember which asshole like comedian seven, we know said that. But yeah, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to watch it in preparation for a single episode of a TV show. And it was fine. I got it. I picked up on it. And this criticism comes up later on in the last episode where there's the big reveal where people are like, bah, you know, it now everyone is going to think it's about him. I'm like, my mom has no idea who that blonde haired guy is. She doesn't know who that guy is at the end of the episode. She didn't really know or care. She got it. They were looking for a Jedi the whole time, someone to raise the child. She's just happy the baby's in a safe place. The whole time she's looking at it, she's like, she's only reacting to the scene, the emotional scene between Din and his son. And it, like, he's going to a safe place, but that could have been an extra. She knew from my reaction it was something, but she didn't know anything. So, like, the show does an amazing job of balancing, again, like four decades worth of viewers, if not more.
I'm also curious about your thoughts on Bo-Katan, who's maybe a more subtler character than Ahsoka. She's actually played by Katie Sackhoff, who voices her character in the anime series, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I'm just curious about how you felt that character translated as someone who just popped up, because she's someone who also has a huge history in, you know, like Mandalorian culture in the Star Wars canon.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't know that. I just, when she came on, I was like, oh, that's the That's the lady from Battlestar Galactica.
Starbucks.
Well, I mean, that's
all.
Like,
oh, they brought Starbucks in. Cool.
Starbucks. All right. She's getting some work. All right.
Yeah.
But that's all I really knew about it. But, like, I mean, you know, again, like, the show does a very good job of sort of giving you context clues, basically. Like, if you're someone who's not familiar with the Star Wars, you know, trilogy or the Star Wars story, like myself, you can sort of get everything that's happening, and you can sort of understand who's important, who's not, through the context clues they kind of leave, and like when they talk about, like, you know, their history and everything like that, you're able to pick up kind of pretty quickly about, like, everything that's going on.
Yeah, and I don't want to give people who are watching this the wrong impression that we're all like, this is literally the first time we've ever seen Star Wars, and now we're doing a podcast about it. But there are certain elements. So eventually, and I think Katie is the person who brought this up to my attention, James. She said that it was about the Marvel movies or the Marvel content series. She's like, oh, my child is never going to be able to catch up with all this by the time he's old enough to start watching them. And I think that's interesting because, yeah, at some point or other, these stories, these franchises need to be self-sustaining, even in the small scale, or else there's going to be a huge bar of entry. And yeah, this show definitely lands. I mean, you get right in there. You don't need to watch everything to understand it, but it makes you appreciate literally everything. Even the movies I didn't like so much. After watching Mandalorian, I'm like, you know what? I like the things they pulled in. Absolutely. All right, so we're getting a little late into the time. Let's go to the finale of the Mandalorian, and then maybe talk a little bit more about the Disney Plus shows. Obviously, it was a culmination of a story that it took them two seasons to tell, and I love the ending of this show, this season. We know it's getting a season. But we do know that that it was just. The whole thing, from the development of the villains, even the fetch quest aspect of the show, I felt was very fun and adventure-y. And when we get to the climax, for me, it blew me away the way a few other moments have in popular culture media. The only other one I could think of that would maybe ring for this crowd would really be Captain America picking up. Spoiler alert for Endgame, Thor's hammer. That's a moment that I have rewatched people's reactions of, just because it's so like, mwah. That is just, and I know it's a goofy superhero movie, and I know this is a goofy space fantasy, but there's something about it that's like, you got why I enjoy this. And as goofy as those two moments are, they carry mythology with them. They carry our own mythology. There is sort of a hopefulness in both, really. There's a hopefulness where Captain America fights back against impossible odds. There's a hopefulness where you see this hero, this literally the icon that is the hero's journey for three movies and beyond, coming back to rescue everyone. I just thought it was amazing.
And they use, you know, as a someone who's obviously very familiar with the Star Wars canon, you know, I love Luke Skywalker. They use sort of the iconography to tell almost all of that scene. You know what I mean? But in an accessible way, right? So, you know, we see the black cloak. He lights up the green lightsaber. You know, a little way as we get in, you see that robot hand, and then him do a force thing with it. You know what I mean? And you're like, you know, it starts off with a comment about a lone X-Wing. What's that going to do? And then I'm like, that was me. I was like, oh my God, it can't be. You know, it was just, God, I loved it. I mean, you know, it's just so exciting.
Darren, you have something to say?
No, I mean, like, the ending was amazing. Like, I'm still kind of amazed, like, how they were able to keep that ending under wraps and not,
right?
No one leaked it or anything. Like,
Al, before I move off, do you have anything you want to add to that? Or
I will say, it was very interesting watching it from my perspective. Not that I disliked it, because I didn't. I thought it was great. It was awesome. But it was a lot of people had a much stronger reaction to it than I did, both on both sides of the fence on that. Like, you guys were like, oh, my God. I like, James especially was like, the X-Wing's here. Oh, my God.
That's very, very accurate.
I wonder if it's Luke. It could be Luke. And I'm just sort of sitting there just waiting for eventually whoever it's going to be. Like, oh, it's Luke Skywalker. That's cool. And I just sort of went on with the rest of the show. And like,
that was my mom's reaction, Al. She was like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. She was happy that Grogu found a home.
Oh, yeah, that was really where my mind was at the time while I was watching it. Like, it was cool that Luke showed up, but I didn't think he stole the show. It was still very much the Mando and Baby Yoda show.
We should discuss that. So the idea, and again, for me, this is interesting. I did not expect it to be Luke Skywalker, and I didn't even think about it. And I've been thinking about it for the last few weeks or last week or so. Why would that be? And I at first I was like, is this genre savviness like that worked against me, where I knew this was going to work? And I actually think what it comes down to is Marvel television. I think it was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think however many seven seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. giving us Sith, who is great, right? That but like there was a time where like every week we would be like, oh, will Robert Downey Jr. make a guest appearance? Mm-hmm. Will Captain America? We kept thinking about it. And then eventually it was just like, no, this is never going to happen. These worlds will never be together. And eventually, I guess it just melted into my head where I stopped being childish about my expectations of what you could get away with on television. And yeah, so the idea that any of the movie characters would ever show up didn't occur to me. When the lone X-Wing showed up, I thought, oh, it's a bunch of X-Wings are going to show up because that's the Empire, the Resistance is coming, or the Rebellion, or whatever, the Republic. And then I was like, well, only one. Maybe it's Dave Filoni. dumb as hell.
I would have lost it. Dave Filoni in his like cowboy hat just walked in. I mean, I'd have lost it. I'd have lost it.
Who's that one guy? Oh, never mind. I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to.
It's funny, Frank, because I, until the X-Wing showed up, until they sort of started doing the iconography, I think I was the same way. You know what I mean? I assumed we'd maybe do like Ezra, a character from one of the TV shows. There was talk about maybe one of the characters from the game. You know what I mean? Like, you know, just, you know, or maybe somebody new. You know what I mean? Like, I just, again, yeah, I think like you said, you know, it seemed unlikely for a big crossover like that, you know?
Yeah. And
there's obviously a difference between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and this. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was on ABC. Well, its parent company is Disney. It's operating on a different sort of budgetary constraint
An amazing person who I think like if we really asked him nicely, he may have guessed on this show just because he's just beloved by so many people. But like, it's so much about that scene was shot in a way that, again, you got references to to Rogue One's hallway fight with Vader. You've got the slow methodical reveal of who this could be, from lone X-Wing to the force sensitive Yoda, Grogu spider sense tingling as he's looking at the monitor, to eventually the black glove, the green lightsaber. And so you just like couldn't, like you were hoping and didn't, you just, it drove you to the point where you just needed to see who was under the hood. And I do think it was an amazing use of story to pick this character. And the argument that happened a little bit in the fan club, and I guess on the greater internet, is this a Deus Ex Machina, a hero coming by to save the day? And I think it depends on how you're using the phrase, because it's a loaded phrase. I think literally it probably is a Deus Ex Machina. It's like classic literature, the machine of the gods. There's a moment where the protagonists have done everything they can do in their power to bring themselves to the climax, to fight back against the odds. And then at the end, the cosmos rewards them for the efforts they put in throughout the series, going there to notify the Jedi, doing all the checking all the boxes for the heroic quest. It doesn't mean much to me that the robot army was destroyed by somebody else, because they did what they were supposed to do as protagonists, which was bring the child, save the child, bring him to safety, and do everything they can, risk everything for him. And they did all of that. And I think there is a narrative arc that Star Wars wants to follow in terms of heroic journeys, and this fits in perfectly. I think it marries with The Last Jedi very well. You see where Luke's arc is going and what happens with him. And it has nothing to do with whether or not Grogu ends up getting killed by Ben Solo. I think, which is a dark kind of thing to think about. I don't think that's what's going to end up happening. I think we'll find out.
So much more story to go.
So much more story to go. And it hasn't been written yet, right? But yeah, there's so much in this. Okay, so there is this one argument, anti-Luke argument, that he ruined the day because he stole Din's son. I think they did. Even that they kind of addressed pretty well.
Yeah,
they went and they said, yeah, you know, he wants to come, but he needs your permission. And they had a moment where they're like, okay, you could go to daycare. You could go to Luke's daycare. Yeah. And I'm sure he's having fun coloring.
R2-D2 shows up and he's like, oh, look at this thing. Oh, I got to go now. Look at that cute droid.
I like the meme where it's the R2-D2's like, can you believe this is a little Yoda?
Yeah, that's great.
I think my only problem, I use that word loosely, is I feel very satisfied with this story. And I don't like, I was shocked when like Mandalorian season 3 wasn't actually, you know,
the book of Boba Fett
or something like that. Like I didn't expect Din Djarin to be gone or anything like that. I just assumed we would shift focus, you know,
and we may,
but this story just seems so, so well wrapped in a great Star Wars way. You know what I mean? In sort of the original trilogy sort of Star Wars way. Obviously there are a whole bunch of unanswered questions, but like that's cool stuff for me to think about. Like, what will happen with the Darksaber? You know, like what is going to happen with this? What is going
to
happen?
And I actually do think that might be where we go. And I give enough credit to the filmmakers here because they've done such a good job balancing the two seasons. I'm sure that that maybe the next season will be a build up to a fourth season, and those two seasons will have a nice arc. And maybe at the very end of the fourth season, we'll get Grogu's in puberty. I don't know. But, I actually don't want to see that. He's got a little, like, lame mustache.
Yeah. Little emo hair, like his ears, God, like, hair over his face.
He's not Groot. But yeah, there's so much of that was told through filmmaking. And again, it's such a great storytelling moment to have, again, a character like Luke show up at this moment where people are questioning, are you a Jedi? Everyone, the reactions from the protagonist and the antagonist in this, from fear to question, like, are you a Jedi? The question itself, are you, like, as if I don't know what these things are. It brings back the legendariness that the Jedi Order had in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And that maybe got lost in the interim. It's the way these stories are told are brilliant. So if you're following us on social media, if you're following us on Tumblr, for example, we posted this GIF stream. I'm going to show it in a minute. This is just from an earlier episode, not the climax, on our Tumblr, that shows some scenes from a Kurosawa movie compared to the first appearance of Ahsoka, right?
All the best Star Wars is Kurosawa.
It's absolutely true.
That's a thing. It kind of is. Like, it's a lot of what Lucas did with the original films was based off of those samurai films. And like, that's not bad. It's not like a knock against Lucas.
And Western and samurai movies
are,
so that's
nonproductive.tumblr.com.
Absolutely.
Westerns and samurai movies are very closely tied together. So, surprising there.
The Seven Samurai to the Magnificent Seven. It's like, you know, it's just part of it. It's inundated in Western culture.
Yes. And it's the entire show is full of moments like that. We didn't even talk about half the guest stars. Timothy Oliphant early on in the series, just milking that Boba Fett armor before passing it over to, I mean, the return of Boba Fett is a thing of legends within Star Wars community. And I think it was handled with a decent amount of grace. Although one of the reasons we didn't bring it up a lot in this is we're not going to really know what's going on with Boba Fett until we follow on with the book of Boba Fett.
For sure.
But the whole thing is just a love letter to the fans and to the subject matter, to Star Wars. And again, I can't understate this. It is so hard to make something to make the people who love a thing something else for them, right? It's not even, I think it's less hard to make an amazing franchise than it is to make a follow-up to that same franchise. Yeah. You can see it fail time and time again and for lots of different people, but everyone involved in this did a wonderful job. I wish we had more time. I wish Pope were here where we could actually talk a little bit more about the amazing production techniques that they used for this, including the virtual rooms and the panels of LCDs that are environments.
I actually know one of the companies that does the LCD panels, the whole LED rooms for the Mandalorian.
Can they work on my studio? Because it's good.
I mean, do you want a bill? Do you want to see one of Disney's bills? Because
this is a good time to bring up patreon.com/nonpro. If you want to build a LCD display for Darren's room so that we can give him like a wall of Christmas sweaters and whatever is behind the mystery drapes in Al's environment. I assume it's like a let's make a deal situation. Yes, it's so much more we can say about, well, all right. That's destroyed the magic. There's no more we can say about The Mandalorian, but we'll spare you it because we've probably said it all on our fan club, facebook.com/group/nonpro. If you're not on Facebook, and you shouldn't be, that's horrible. We're thinking about doing more of this on Discord. It's a little bit more open, not a normal social media network, but we don't really use it much. So if you do, please come bug us and tell us to use it. non-productive.com/Discord, join our Discord, and then force us to talk about these things there instead.
And for sure, if you find this later, right on YouTube, comment below. We'll still engage. We love to nerd out.
Yes. So, like we said, we're not going to really be able to know much about Boba Fett until we see his series. But there was a bunch of others. What was that?
We know where it's starting from to an extent, though.
Oh yeah, sure. He puts a cap in Jabba's. What's that guy's name?
I forget the guy's name. It's like
something Fortuna.
I think so.
Wiz Khalifa.
Fortuna.
Wiz Khalifa. He takes over for Wiz Khalifa.
Migos. I think it's Migos. Is it not?
You know what? I would love. Can we do a campaign to get them on? Yes, I would sign a petition. All right. Anyways, this was supposed to be a segue to talk about the other things Disney Plus has got going on for it. And our roving reporter, Darren, who's been with us, thankfully, this entire show. Thank you, Darren.
No problem.
You've been sharing things left and right to the fan club all the time. I've been told by two distinct people who are not related at all that they get their geek news from the fan club. Partially, if not mostly, thanks to you.
I'm doing the Lord's work. Thank you so much for that. I'm just out there on the beat, making sure all the geeks are well fed with all this new knowledge I've obtained.
There aren't even conventions anymore. We send them out there anyways. He's hanging out in the Javits. What, back when it was a hospital? It was really
it was weird. That. Yeah,
probably should have brought that up.
Yeah, they asked me to leave.
All right. So we have a lot more about the Marvel shows than we do about the Star Wars shows.
Yeah.
Let's actually go right into the Marvel one so that we're not immediately saying, we don't know yet. Marvel's upcoming shows, I guess the first one out of the bat, the one's coming up in January, mid-January, WandaVision, which is just fun to say.
I'm excited.
I am. Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, and then two names I did not expect coming to this show, Randall Park and Kat Dennings. So they are reprising their roles from various Marvel movies, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because Randall Park was the FBI agent in Ant-Man, and Kat Dennings was in Thor.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it looks like they're reprising their those roles. And I believe Tiana Harris is like, I think there's Tiana Paris, rather.
Yep. She's a new character, right? But she's going to be in upcoming movies? Or was she?
Oh, so she's based on, she's going to be playing Monica Rambeau, who you may remember from Captain Marvel, but the adult version. Yeah. That's a growing up thing I just did.
Got it. I understand.
That's how you grow.
Yeah. So I believe that this is going to be this show isn't connected to any of the what happened? Did something happen? Are we getting feedback? We're getting feedback. Are we getting alien invasion? Is this WandaVision right now happening?
No.
So anyways, I believe that this doesn't have a lot to do with any of the Scarlet Witch and Vision comic books that have come out either recently or in the past, at least not strongly. There'll probably be references to them, but it is a setup allegedly for, or actually I think this has been actually confirmed, set up for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes, it
certainly seems like it's a setup for a big portion of whatever the new phase of Marvel is going to be. They seem to be leaning very heavily into connecting things to the upcoming Doctor Strange movie and, you know, this sort of multiverse angle.
They are leaning on the multiverse, which I think makes sense. Sure. Because like DC is trying to get its foot in the door on that, and for some reason keeps stumbling, which they really don't. They just put a little bit more money on putting all those Berlanti shows into one of the movies.
Yeah,
and you just that's it. You're done. You've established it. You've got the head start. I mean, can use it for free. DC, just do it.
I don't know. We were watching this is like completely off tangent, but we were a documentary and Berlanti was in it, and he's like 32 or something. And I'm like, you shouldn't have this many successful television shows. Like, who are you? Yeah. I'm like, so mad.
He's very talented. That's who he is. Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the production team for the most part, except for Matt Shakman, who did Game of Thrones. I don't even know which ones. And The Great's on Hulu and is great. It's a little risque, and it's about Catherine the Great, but it's a lot of fun. It's a historical drama that like isn't very, I don't know, it doesn't feel accurate to history. It's very goofy. So if he brings that aesthetic to the WandaVision, I think it's going to be fun. All right, following up with that is Falcon and Winter Soldier, which was pushed back from, I think, an August release.
Both of these actually were supposed to be this year.
Oh.
And then they kind of nebulously got pushed into next year and then got like actual releases.
I want to say the trailer for like Falcon and Winter Soldier was really good. Like, it looked like a trailer for a movie, right? Like, that's not just me. Like, it looked the return of Zemo is something to be really excited for.
I was so shocked. I couldn't believe it. Daniel Brühl's back. And that's awesome. Yeah. All I got.
The guy's back. I want to see more of him.
I'm excited because I think it's a brief, but I think it recognizes that obviously with, potentially Anthony Mackie's character taking over the Captain America shield, that it needs to maybe recognize some of the political troubles that is America's history and that sort of stuff. And I think they come out with a great line right in the beginning that kind of says, you know, look, we get it. Captain America's great, but you know, America overall, you know, great, but has, you know, things that we need to talk about. And I think the show sounds like it's not going to shy away from that. I mean, I'm sure it doesn't.
You have a character, U.S. agent, if I remember correctly, is supposed to be showing up in that show as well. And probably tackling some of the more like gung-ho.
My guess is you're thinking of Super Patriot, but but maybe US
or
Agent.
Homelander.
You know what it's gonna be? It's gonna be George Washington Bridge. That guy. Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, Trump would laugh at that. Anyway. No, he wouldn't. Yeah, then after that, do we have anything else we want to share about this?
I'm ready for it. I like Bucky. I like Anthony Mackie. I like Falcon.
Yeah. They have good chemistry together.
Yeah.
They hate each other. It's great.
Yeah, it is. So Loki, we follow up with Loki, which is, of course, a huge thing because this is headlined by, I guess it's kind of unfair to say that the, you know, Captain America and the Winter Soldier or Falcon and Winter Soldier both those characters were kind of second to Captain America. I think Loki may have been first to Thor. You know, I think he was Loki.
You're not wrong. I mean, anything his career exploded after that. And they worked him into future films based upon that performance and how much people really liked him. And, you know, people like Thor and, you know, they like Chris Hemsworth. But like that, the Loki and Hiddleston like love for that character, it's huge. So yeah.
So I have some info on this one. Obviously, this is going to be powered by Tom Hiddleston and you know the breakout hit character Loki. And this, for those of you who don't know, and I think pretty much no one at this point wouldn't know this who is listening or watching us. In Avengers Endgame, there's a part where the Tesseract. They're going back in time and gathering all the Infinity Stones and the Tesseract, and a version of Loki apparently disappears and absconds with it, which creates a bunch of like questions and did for our fans in the fan club about which Loki that is. Does that mean Loki never dies? If Loki disappears, then did he always disappear in the Battle of New York? And questions, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, I have no idea where the show is going, but I could tell you about the comics. So Loki in the comics has had some amazing runs where it literally does question the nature of him as a character, both as a god of mischief, a character that who when in his original appearances was like this horns, almost goblin-esque, older kind of what you would think in a like an English class you would read about Loki, to the you know young sexy Loki, to the Loki who dies kind of by self-sacrifice and is reborn as a child and ages up, and then the Loki from dreams and mythology, like the very nature of who Loki is as a god and as a person is called into question in many of these comic book stories. If the series touches on any of this, and it seems like that's definitely where it's aiming, it's going to be mind blowing. And a lot of people are going to have trouble wrapping their heads around what this show is going to be. And I'm here for it.
I'm saying is that Owen Wilson didn't sign on just to do this TV show. There's going to be a lot of time and multiverse shenanigans coming up.
You don't know nothing about Owen Wilson.
Lots of movie appearances is all I'm saying.
Hopefully, but like, yeah, again, if they, because the big question about Loki is how much of a villain is he and how much of a hero is he? And when there's reasons to question it in the movies that we have, there's much bigger reasons to question it when you take into effect the mythological Loki and the comic book Loki, who has had a much longer history of doing horrible things and doing not so horrible things. And those series do, the comic series do a wonderful job balancing all of that. I hope this show does a good job too. Although, you know, measure your expectations at 6 episodes.
Do we know what the agency he works for is called? It's like TBA or something like that? Or
Time Agency. The
I don't know, but I'm not sure if you know this.
Give me this answer.
But a Rick and Morty writer, Michael Waldron, is the showrunner.
Oh,
that's going to be,
because it looks a lot. I when you said that, it's like, wow, a lot of that sort of makes sense as I looked at the trailer, because it looks like just like Adventures in the Universe and Time and Space.
Time Variance Authority is the.
I got it. But like, so that's interesting. Like I'm hoping that this isn't a show where Loki's trying to get away for too much of it, because I like the episodic nature of like he's off on a mission. He does the mission. And like, we were just talking about Mandalorian, how much we really enjoyed that. And there was an overarching plot, sure. But like the week to week adventure story was really what sold us on it. And that's what I'm looking forward to hearing. So far, that's what it looks like it is. But if I'm also seeing Loki try to escape every week, I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, do the adventure. I want the adventure.
We have one more concrete show. We'll watch to find out. We have one more concrete show we could talk about, which ironically is the most flexible one. It's the What If. It's an animated series. Starts summer 2021. Has the voices of so many people, pretty much everyone in the movies, including Chadwick Boseman, which is touching, and I can't wait for the show. Most number of episodes so far, 23, and it really is just going to be a play on because I think these episodes will be significantly shorter. It's going to be a play on what if, like, what are the various, how did the various things that happen in the Marvel universe, what if they went a different route? I have high hopes for this show. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be very touching to see some of these actors come back to reprise their roles, if in a little different format. Aside from that, we'll just quickly go through them. Hawkeye is coming in 2022. Jeremy Renner is back. People think it's going to be about Kate Bishop.
She was cast. So
I don't know if they know if she's cast as Kate Bishop.
They'd have, yeah.
Oh, they do. Kaylee Seinfeld.
Yep, Kaylee Seinfeld confirmed that she was cast as Kate Bishop.
Well, I like her.
I do too. I'm excited.
What I'm not quite sure on, rumors seem to be that he's training his daughter, Kate Bishop, which isn't comic accurate, but I guess it doesn't have to be. Making her his daughter seems kind of unnecessary.
I was under the impression that it's someone else, that they didn't recast her as his daughter, and that it is still heavily based on the Matt Fraction.
Cool.
That excellent run of comic.
Yeah, we got Ms. Marvel. We have a few details about that as well. Kamala Khan.
Went into production.
And Moon Knight with Oscar Isaac. Of course, She-Hulk. I forgot about She-Hulk.
Yeah.
And then I think they also revealed Secret Invasion is coming. But all these things are so nebulous, we're not really going to give you anything more than maybe the names of a few people who are attached. So I don't want to spend too much time on that. Unless anybody's got something awesome they would like to share. That's right, non-productive. We don't have anything awesome to share.
Those are the big ones. The people that you'd expect to be attached to the different named things are attached to the different named things.
Yes. all right.
So no surprising recasts in the Marvel universe.
Let's talk about Star Wars Disney Plus shows that are coming now that we do have confirmation. Season 3 is separate than the Book of Boba Fett. So returning cast is pretty much everyone, including Giancarlo Esposito as Moff Gideon.
Moff Gideon, yep.
So I guess fingers crossed that they're going to have something interesting to do with these characters. I would assume it involves the Darksaber because that sort of just came up. It was like, we're just not going to leave this. We're going to just leave this hanging. Obviously we're excited for the next season of this, and hopefully it'll have a good arc that lasts for quite a while. Andor.
So was the Darksaber something that was brought up in other Star Wars
Clone
movies?
Wars, yeah, the cartoon.
I just recently watched Rebels after finishing Mandalorian because I was like, oh, well, let me go add more context to this. So I went and rewatched. I went and finished Rebels because I never actually finished it. And like, it comes up, the origins for that is brought up in Rebels. It did exist in Clone Wars, but like, for me, like, I only saw like these rando Mandalorians use it, so I had no idea. That's
Mando Mandos.
Oh boy!
No, so it was always.
We are gonna pitch this show. Brew coffee in your respective homes. We're staying up, but we're pitching this.
So it'll be like Troopers, but with Mandos, right? So remember the Star Wars parody Troopers. Mandalorians.
I'm already cold on this. Let's just.
But yeah, I just remember. So when Moff Gideon cut his way out of the TIE fighter, I was like, "Oh, it's one of those swords." I had no idea there was only one. I assumed this was like a Mandalorian thing that they had.
the last person who had it was like a like main Rebels character. So yeah. It's interesting that it potentially went back to Bo-Katan and then went to Gideon. Maul Gideon.
Yeah. Somehow she lost it to Gideon in one way or another. So
long story short, Darren, it's some geek crap.
Yeah.
Got it.
I mean, it's exactly
into it. I was on, I think, the Wikipedia. And I was what is this? And it had nothing to do with the Mandalorian. I think it may have watched like a random episode of Clone Wars. I'm like, what is, and then it was just this long essay about, oh my God. And I was just, I can't.
I mean, it's pretty much the only thing you really need to know is that the Mandalorian who has it gets fame and acclaim because they beat the other person who had it. And generally the people who have it are pretty strong because they have to beat up the other guy.
When a man saw it, she was like, oh, it's the Elder One. And I'm like, this is just too much. We can't do this anymore. You can't cross the streams. And then I cross the streams by bringing up crossing the streams.
There you go.
But the Elder One concept is a very traditional science fiction fantasy sort of concept.
Yeah.
Right?
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
So, next show is Andor. It's got... it's of course
Diego Luna, right?
That's it from Rogue One. It looks good. I guess it's a prequel to Rogue One. Eventually,
it's essentially the vibe I got from it. It's like Birth of the Rebel Alliance sort of show, right? It's going to follow him, but he's like one of the founding members of the Rebel Alliance.
Cool.
So it's going to be kind of about a bunch of scrappy people starting up a rebellion. Which I mean. That sounds awesome.
Which we've done, but we haven't done. Like we've had a lot of origin stories for like, and this is how we got involved. But there was never like, when did we call ourselves the Rebel Alliance? When did we get the symbol and the military might and everything else and generals and an organization? Like, how did that go about? Like, I guess I don't really need to know that, but if you want to tell me that story, I'm interested.
It could be an interesting story if done well.
Yeah, and if he's someone would tell me, like, what about the bounty hunters? What's their story? I probably would have been like, I don't know if I care. But I did. So, just going down on the list, I think this is the one I maybe have the most to say about, is Obi-Wan Kenobi. This has got Ewan McGregor, and we just found out Hayden Christensen returning as Darth Vader. This is sort of dangerous territory for me because so far the best stuff that came out of Star Wars for me, aside from the original trilogy, is stuff that sort of stays clear from the Skywalker saga, just to give it some breathing room. Like The Mandalorian, for example. This feels like it's going to immediately recontextualize the first Star Wars movie, because the question is always like, what the hell has Obi-Wan been doing? Other than, loading up on carbs and losing part of his hair. What has he been doing all those years? But in between being Ewan McGregor and Sir Alec Guinness. And I guess we're going to find out.
You want to say.
I don't know. I'm so excited about this. So one of the great things about the Clone Wars is how it is recontextualized the prequels and added a ton of character and depth to Anakin Skywalker, to Obi-Wan Kenobi, to these people, to make them feel more human, right? And I don't hate the prequels. They're full of really interesting ideas. Yeah. George, is always a great ideas man. You know, maybe his dialogue's not the best. We won't have to get into it. But, I think getting an opportunity for these two characters to, again, get that recontextualization in live action, it should be exciting, right? And I don't even necessarily know if we need to do it too crazy. You know what I mean? Particularly because, like, why are you going to pay Hayden Christensen to, just appear in the Darth Vader suit, right? Maybe do a combination of flashbacks and maybe a version of the Force Book Messenger we see in The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, to give them sort of this relationship, to kind of feel that door close, on their relationship before we get to the battle of the Death Star.
Enough in the first film, in A New Hope, where you have room to work with, because Obi-Wan establishes himself as a person and a character. Luke recognizes him when he sees him. He's like, oh, hey, Ben! And, like... you know.
Yeah, he was doing something. They knew of old Ben.
I'm just sitting in a cave.
About this one. I feel like this is a good way of putting of trying too hard and putting too much out there and making it way too loaded. I think on the fan club again, I posted an edit of Obi-Wan's PTSD. And the fact that he is so distant, the last interaction he had with his old student was sent burning him in a volcano, was, I think, interesting. And I think it maybe we lose it a little bit, although that edit isn't canon.
But also, you know, I want to throw this back at you, but even that edit is a recontextualization of their relationship by looking at the existing parts.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. No, it is. My point is that if that edit can be extrapolated into a series, and I don't remember how many episodes it is. Hold on.
I think we don't know. Like 6 episodes or something.
Probably.
Like, it wasn't
because of the names attached. We don't expect it to be a huge thing.
It's not going to be 24 episodes or something.
It is possible that they could, with these two actors, and again, it may just be limited what we have with Hayden Christensen, but we might be able to recontextualize it so that it does a good job, or it could just be like, all right, here's a whole nother ham sandwich in front. I'm trying to make that phrase work. A whole nother ham sandwich right in front.
I will say I like Hugh McGregor, and Hugh McGregor really likes Star Wars and is very excited to be a part of it. And I think if you bring that kind of passion in, like I look forward to that at least. You
know? Just one thing, the fact that I actually really liked The Last Jedi, the fact that we were also able to give Mark Hamill, literally Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, a scene where he can show what Jedi Master Luke could do was very satisfying for me.
Yeah.
Even though the scene in The Last Jedi where he showed also what a Jedi Master can do with the Force trick, which I think is very poetic and ties it to like a perfect little bow around it. I like that we got to see a full range of motion for the character. So if we could give that to Ewan McGregor and Obi-Wan, that would be sweet. Ahsoka. I want to keep calling her something else. Ahsoka gets a show. We don't know many details because we just found out this is happening.
But I think we got a bit of a backdoor pilot in The Mandalorian for
I think it's going to be Thrawn, right?
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, Rebels ends with another potential Jedi character. Oh, you said we're going to spoil
it. Fine. I love Rebels, and I'll watch it eventually. I'm not paying attention to this.
Another potential Jedi character kind of like being thrown off into the universe like millions of light years away with Thrawn. And, you know, at the end of that series, there's a little flash forward, and it's Ahsoka and another one of the main characters are like, well, we're going to go find him. Right. Oh. And they get on a ship and they go. So I'm really excited, hopefully, for the sequel to Rebels in live action.
Yep. Because we know Thrawn is alive. And if he is alive, you have to assume the other guy is too.
And Thrawn is a classic, like, he's literally from novels before the prequels came out. So, like, fans, again, it's one of those things where, like, you're doing something that fans love. Star Wars Rangers of the New Republic. We kind of have an idea of what it's going to be about. Mm-hmm. It's probably about the policemen we've been seeing in recent episodes of The Mandalorian. That's all we really know. I think we maybe know a little bit more about Star Wars, The Bad Batch, which is about a group of Clone Wars reject soldiers. I guess they're is that the best way of describing them?
No, I think they're like main soldiers. I guess I didn't watch the last season of Clone Wars, so someone correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like they might be working for the Empire when we're watching them. Like that they're just...
From the trailer, I got the other impression. These guys are like defecting. Or like they seem like they're fighting the Stormtroopers.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I think they're clone soldiers that defected from the Empire. I guess we don't know.
One of the characters in Bad Batch is one of the guys in Rebels is one of the characters that winds up not Rex but Wolf, I think, is one of the other clones that winds up fighting on their side and joining the rebellion.
Yeah, we're losing people on this one because this happens to be something we have a blind spot on. I'm relatively certain we are correct, and it is well established. Whatever it is, people know who the Bad Batch is, and we look like idiots. But that's fine.
This one's coming up. I like the Clone Lab stories going forward because I just think that they're a cool concept, and I wanted to see that.
I love how much The Mandalorian teased with that concept. That was pretty much just a blink and you miss it in the prequels. Two more to talk about for Star Wars: The Acolyte, which apparently is supposed to be set in the final days of the High Republic era, which is a period we have not spent a lot of time in.
So all we know is that the High Republic is like Disney's new initiative for the new period of Star Wars. And they just released their first three books this year, and I haven't read any of them, so I have no idea. That's it. That's all.
Where does the High Republic take place in the timeline? Is it like after the sequel trilogy, after that, and everything else?
Earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like post Old Republic, prequel.
Got it. Okay.
So one of the neatest things about this is Leslie Headland is set to write, I think direct, and she's showrunner on the show. You may know her from Russian Doll on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
So this is like a pretty, like, for me, a weird get. So I think it's going to be really interesting. And apparently it's going to be like a mystery thriller. So, okay, cool. And the final one is Lando. Lando's getting a show. We have not heard anything about Childish Gambino. What's his real name?
So they said it will star both of them.
Donald Glover. No, I don't. Is Donald Glover in?
Yeah, they confirmed that both Billy Dee Williams and Donald Glover will be reprising the roles in the show.
I have not.
Which makes me think it's going to be a, you know, like a past, present, future sort of thing.
Lando.
Stories of when he was younger.
They could do literally anything with Lando, and it would be fun. I think the aim would be fun. Just be fun.
Yeah. Lando Mandos with Lando.
And shoot that soon. Shoot that soon. Shoot that series soon.
Yes, because we want it so much.
Yes.
You monster. So that's basically all the stuff. Disney Plus, Star Wars, a little bit of Marvel in there too. We've hit all the check boxes you've asked us, fans. And if you'd like to be a fan of us, please like, follow, subscribe. You're watching this on Facebook. Make sure you like our Facebook page. If you're listening through a podcast, why did you just listen to this one podcast? Subscribe. And if you are on our YouTube page, please subscribe, because that's how we pays the money. That's how we pays the bills. The Patreon's a non-pro.
These are actually Zoom backgrounds.
we need the things. But let's go through our guests. Darren, please plug your podcast, which I dearly love. Also about television legacy and how we can't ever be happy.
Yes. If you want to learn about not being happy, listen to my podcast called The SNL Nerds. It's a podcast I do with my buddy John Trumbull, talk all about Saturday Night Live. We break down each new episode. Sometimes we'll talk about an SNL movie, talk about the past of Saturday Night Live. It's it's lore, all that good jazz.
My favorite part about SNL Nerds is it's really like a window in a form of geekdom that you miss, because you think geeks like Star Wars or they like Lord of the Rings or something like it's always like some genre thing, but they are exactly as geeky about SNL associated lore than the Star Wars fans are for Star Wars. It's amazing. Yeah, so it is, a lot of it is like, it's about TV legacy, and I love the show. I know we didn't talk about any of the toys that are coming out, but can you talk very briefly about about toys? Because we're going to tease an episode the fans want us to make, but we haven't yet prepped it, and it's Toys That Time Forgot. So just talk about Star Wars toys in terms of Mandalorian for a second as a segue to this. What's your bullet point, other than the fact that people spent a lot of money on the Razor Crest and it blew up?
Oh no, I was going to say that. But it was really funny because it was HasLab's big crowdfunding project was the Razor Crest for Mandalorian. And like literally, like after it was funded, it was great. Like the second season comes out, and everyone like watched it blow up and went, "Oh." Like it was hysterical. Like not that anyone was like, "Oh, I want my money back," but everyone did go, "Oh, but I just bought that. I'm not actually going to have it until next year when the crowdfunding's all finished." And they're just like, "Oh, they blew that up. Is that not going to be back next season, guys?"
That is very interesting to me. I don't know how that happened. Also, any of the ideas. So I really don't know how season three, the biggest question for me for season three of Mandalorian, all the narrative about like what James was saying earlier about how it came to a close at season two, blah, 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 blah. I buy all of that, but the merchandising, how can you have Mando? How can you have the Mandalorian without Baby Yoda? It's the Baby Yoda show. You can't do that. Who's gonna move these Baby Yoda dolls? Season one, they had no toys ready. Season two, they had all the toys, and then Luke kidnapped that child.
But yeah, like that was so crazy to me when season one came out and none of the merch was ready to go because people were clamoring for it.
I love the commitment to the keeping the secret. I mean, the fact that they kept Luke a secret and then Yoda, Baby Yoda or the child or Grogu, whatever. James, do you have anything you would like to share with us that you would like to promote at this point?
Promote our YouTube page.
We need more.
I don't do anything, Frank. Subscribe to us on YouTube. I promise I'll put something there at some point. I swear.
One day. Yeah. In the next few next week, we might have some end of year show we are playing around with, maybe, and we are planning on doing toys that Time Forgot very soon. If you have ideas, please find us on social media. Leave us some comments. We'll be happy to cover those toy lines or whatever with you. And of course, subscribe to SNL Nerds because, the last episode of SNL is already like, I think it, like last week, you guys are doing SNL movies for the rest of the winter, at least, right?
We're going to try to figure it out. We're like, there's a bunch of SNL documentaries we could do. There's a bunch of SNL related movies. We kind of stretch out the definition of what an SNL related movie is. Like the next episode we're going to do is, we're going to talk about Wonder Woman 84 just because Kristen Wiig is in it. So technically, it kind of is an SNL movie. So,
I love it. I think that's great. I think that's absolutely awesome. So subscribe to that show independently. Thank everyone for contributing to our Patreon. We've got a little bit of a wonderful thank you message to them. Hopefully stay tuned for the next one. Love you all. And this is the way. Really, it's the way. It's the way we're going out.
Yep.
I also never take off my helmet.
I love having the yup of Al in the background to our thank you to our patrons. All right, bye everyone. We love you. Go to bed. It's late. Go home.